Hello, everyone, and welcome to the 45th episode of the Fans of DC Universe podcast. I'm your host, Nathan Nutt Payson, and this is the only DCU podcast for the fans, by the fans, and the best source for all DC Universe news and discussion on everything DCU. Although now we're also more of a generic DC podcast, partly because DC Universe has become DC Universe Infinite. Now, I know it's been a while, but I've been dying to talk about some DC stuff with some people. So, joining us this week, we have the wonderful, amazing, awesome Squid.
Hello.
How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
I went to a comic book shop for the first time in like a year and a half. And it was an interesting experience. Yeah. It was free comic book day. And all the comics, free comics I actually wanted were all gone. So that was fun. Because wow. I wanted the Batman free comic book day. I wanted the Spider-Man Venom free comic book day. I basically wanted the Marvel and DC stuff.
This is why you gotta get one of those tents and sleep outside the shop.
And sleep outside your comic shop for free comic.
Waiting for the release.
Yep. Like, please, please let me in. I just want one comic that's free already. Yeah. I mean, they're online. At least the DC ones were free online this one Wednesday. And I'm pretty sure, don't quote me on this, but I'm pretty sure they were just, like, at parts of a comic that, like have mostly already released. Like, it wasn't, like, new material.
Yeah, sometimes they do that.
Which, so it was, like, there's, let me look it up, but I think it's, like, Suicide Squad King Shark. Which, the comic, by the way, is already free on DC Universe. So, if you have DC Universe, go read it, you know? And then, I'm trying to remember, then the DC Batman one had half of I Am Batman number 0, and then had half of something, then had, I want to say it was from Batman number 111, but it could have been 112.
So there are more of those free samplers of comics. I mean, that's what Free Comic Book Day is anyway.
I always like when Free Comic Book Day is new material designed to set up the future. That's always what I get most excited for. So, like, this is a terrible example, but, like, DC's Year of the Villain.
Was that even Free Comic Book Day? I can't remember.
It was, yeah. That was way back when. What were the... Do you remember that, like, the Free Comic Book Day last year, which didn't happen, was, like, terrible? And, like, no one had their shit together, and it was hilarious?
I do not. Remember,
like the X-Men comic, like the X-Men comic was like a prelude to X of Swords, but like it came out like a week before X of Swords began, and it was super weird. It was supposed to come out like a couple months before, and then because of COVID, like it got so delayed. No. Yeah, and then it came out, and it was like incredibly underwhelming, and it was like okay. And then they ended up changing the stuff in the comic, putting that exact stuff in the opening of X of Swords, except they've changed some things around they wanted to fix.
So it has even less value.
Yes, exactly. It was wild. But no, Free Comic Book Day was fun. I didn't get a single... Actually, I got one free comic. I got The Resistance number 1 because it was free. If you don't know this, do you know the story of Resistance number 1?
Wasn't that the comic book about a pandemic that got delayed by the pandemic?
Yes. So,
like, delayed a lot?
Was released, because it was announced, right, in, like, September, August of 2019, right? Yeah. And it was like, this: we have an idea for a new superhero world, and we wanted to make this an ongoing Marvel DC type thing. But we obviously want to start slow and then expand forward, right? We're also going to use this comic to launch a new imprint with some other great books by people like Ben Percy. And of course, this is written by Mike Krasinski. I don't remember his name. But anyway, point is, this comic, The Resistance number 1, releases a week after things have shut down. It's the last week stuff is in comic stores, okay? Mm-hmm. And it's been planned for months, and it's been written for months, okay? And this comic, as you're reading it, you're like, oh, shit, this is literally, like, what we're going through right now. And then, like, it literally, like, genuinely felt like he had gone through a pandemic before and was just writing casually about his experience in, like, a fictional way. Like, there was just so many accuracies. And then when the second issue came out, like, months later, because of the comic shutdown thing, it was, like, focused on how the pandemic triggered extra discussion around race and racial protests as a result of people getting antsy about stuff. And I was like, what? I'm like, no joke, this comic was written before all of the stuff went down, but it was somehow like incredibly predictive.
To be fair, I feel like this stuff is kind of easy to predict.
No, it's not necessarily hard to predict, but it's still surreal to release a comic about a pandemic, during a pandemic, and watch like things that we ended up doing as a result of the pandemic and things that ended up occurring were just casually in the comic. Like, it was just surreal. But also, mm-hmm. no one bought the comic because no one wanted to read a comic about a pandemic.
About a pandemic
was happening.
Yeah.
Although pandemic TV shows are getting popular. I know, like, there was Sweet Tooth came out. That people love that show, right? I haven't seen it. Mm-hmm. I hear it's good. And then
I haven't seen it either.
Why the Last Man is about an epidemic where every single man, except for one, is dies suddenly.
Does that really count as an epidemic, like, at that point?
I don't know.
It's just a bunch of people dying at once, and then it stops.
True. What an interesting story. I'm curious to see how that... Have you seen the trailer for it?
Yes, I have.
It looks really good. I'm actually excited for it. I never read the comic, so I'm curious to see how it goes.
The comic was interesting.
So, I would talk with you more about Why the Last Man, but we have a lot of news to discuss.
Oh, there's so much.
Ignoring the fact that we haven't podcasted for months, okay? This is like, I don't even know what to call this. I just wanted to talk, and I was like, okay, we'll post this, and hopefully we can keep this going for another couple weeks at least.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
But, like, I'd love, because I enjoy talking with you and people about comics, so I don't get to do that enough, right? But we have a lot of news. We're going to discuss Suicide Squad, which I assume you've seen.
Yes, I have.
Yes, you have. I know it took you a while because you were going to see it in theaters, right?
Yeah, but then issues around that building meant that I couldn't.
Rip. Also, Tim
Drake. So I just ended up watching on streaming.
We get to talk about the greatest announcement of all time, which is Tim Drake. So good, exciting. I love it. Titans premiere episode, which, you know, we started this podcast sort of talking about Titans.
Oh boy.
Actually, that's actually Titans. The origin of this podcast is literally from talking about Titans. So,
yeah.
You know, it's a big moment for us. And then November solicits. And then we haven't talked about comics for like since Future State began. So, you know,
yes.
We had to talk about that, obviously. Mm-hmm. So our first story this week, we're going to talk about the Titans first episode. Just the first episode, not the rest. I've only seen the first episode. I love Titans, but I hate binge-watching TV. So I'll probably end up watching the next episode either today or tomorrow. But I'm taking it slow. So real quick, if you don't want Titans Season 3's first episode spoiled, just jump ahead 8 minutes from now. I'm going to time it as best I can. So then you can just skip it. But... with that being said, what'd you think of Titans' first episode?
I have very mixed thoughts on it, of course, because it's Titans.
Yes. Yeah.
I think this is the strongest premiere the show has had so far. Strongest season.
It's not really a high bar, though, so let's walk through,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
The first episode of the first season was very bad, and the Titans don't even meet at the end of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
You've got Starfire doing something with Russian men. Tim Drake, or not Tim Drake, Dick Grayson being like, fuck Batman, and doing something in Detroit. And then Raven is just having nightmares. And the episode, if I recall, ends with with Raven and Dick meeting. But that's the entire first episode, right? The second season.
I don't mind that as a premise.
It wasn't bad. I liked it. It wasn't a bad episode, but it was definitely neutral for a pilot. Like, it wasn't a great pilot. And then the second season's first episode is a season finale to one, and
a premiere.
And it just, none of it worked because it was so messy.
Gosh, yeah.
And what's his face's name? Raven's dad or whoever.
Trigon.
It just looked so bad. Oh my god. What were they thinking?
Not a great start. So and this season never really picked up from there either, because they kept introducing characters.
I thought it picked up from there. It just fell apart. Like, the best episode of that season is the what the hell happened to Jericho, where, like, if I recall, Dick is on the side talking to Jason Todd or whatever. Like, that was the last good episode of that season, but it was really, really good. The problem is that season had Cadmus, it had all sorts of stuff, and it was just
like, it feels like it's written by a bunch of misguided DC fans who are like, oh, let's fit in as many cool, like, characters as we can in here.
Yes,
we can have it be connected in this way, and this way, and this way, which is something a fan would do, instead of someone who and is good at making TV.
Watching this premiere, I very much felt that way, right? Because you've got Barbara Gordon is now the commissioner. Yeah. Like, that was a cool fake out, though. I did appreciate it, where they kept being like, Commissioner Gordon, Commissioner Gordon, Commissioner
Gordon. And it's like, oh, it's a different
And then you finally
Gordon.
See it, and it's Barbara, and it's like, what? But then, like, she's talking about, like, oh, the complicated relationship between him, her, and the Joker, and Batman, and talking about how Batman is a sick person. And, like, there's all this clear context and, like, stuff where it's just so heavily implied that, like, you need to be a hardcore fan to understand all this is just wild. Because, like,
the show's
there's
a mess.
So much. Right? And then there's, like, and we meet Tim Drake. But, like, his story is so to the side. It was so out of place.
Yes.
He's got, like, here's the problem. I thought this was a much better premiere than the rest, as we talked about. And I think part of that's because there were fewer characters than almost every other Titans episode so before.
Yeah,
we had a fun moment where we got to see the Titans fighting over something very vague, unclear. The Jason Todd stuff was interesting. And then the, like, deconstruction of Batman's relationship to, like, and his obsession with having soldiers was really interesting. I don't quite know if I buy it as, like, an interpretation, but I did like what they did with it. And I really enjoyed it. If that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
How did you feel about the Jason Todd stuff? Because that was interesting.
In episode one?
Yeah.
Because I've seen the first three.
Oh,
I'm ahead of you.
Yeah. So,
I know even
just
more
to remind
about
you what
Jason
happened.
Todd stuff than you do.
Just to remind you what happened so you don't spoil it, okay?
Yes, exactly.
So he is, like, pissed at Batman because he's found the Joker. And he's like, he's gone to Gotham, of course. He left the Titans because he was like, I hate the Titans. Or whatever. I forget all the details. And he finds the Joker. And then he's like, Bruce, we can take him out. And Bruce's like, I literally can't get there tonight. Just stay still. He's like, but we can do it. And he's like, don't do it. Please. And he's like, okay. And then it's like, then the comms feed. And then he's like, sees this drug or something. He takes it. His eyes pupillate. And then he, like, goes to take on the Joker. But it's not even a close fight. Like, he doesn't even see the Joker before he's on the ground and dead. And, of course, the Joker kills him with a crowbar, laughing hysterically. And then the Dick is like, how the hell did this happen? And is starting to piece together that that Jason Todd's been doing some sort of drug stuff with the drug. And and it's interesting. Like, I don't hate this. It was much better handling than I expected. I haven't seen the rest of Jason Todd stuff, obviously.
I thought it was rushed.
It was definitely rushed.
Like, but like all this stuff is just new information in this episode, and they have him, like, killed off, like, immediately, like, right away.
Yeah.
Just because, for setup for the rest of the season, they're like, this is so weird about, like, Titans, is it doesn't feel like the seasons are that connected.
No, it really does. I mean,
like, you feel like each of them is being pulled in different directions.
Like, there's, like, this brief mention that, like, Raven still exists. And I was like, oh, yeah, Raven does
exist. Speaking
of
characters existing, Rose?
Who? Yeah, I know. I'm always thinking about that, right? Like, Ravager's not been in it at all. And, like, in some ways, I think it's really healthy. Like, Hawk and Dove haven't been in it yet, although, obviously, there is a Hawk and Dove episode. Yes. I think it's healthy because one of the problems we've really noticed/run into is that Titans is so many characters, right? And at some point, you just need to take a couple pieces out of the way.
Mm-hmm,
and you can bring them back in later for a little side plot or a little, hey, we need you for this little thing.
I just think it's funny that like practically like the major players in season two aren't here anymore. Especially the way season two ended with them like all like becoming a family or whatever, and now they're just not here anymore. It's like, okay.
I will say that
this is why it feels like a different show practically.
Yep, exactly. No, absolutely.
Every season is just so different. It's the show's a mess.
It's
almost beautiful to watch.
Honestly, I get it. And like now this is on HBO Max. Like this is the HBO Max budget and writing teams. But they were like, huh, maybe we should make some corrections. But as such, it feels like the third soft reboot. It's so weird.
It is so weird.
It's like, what that, like, this is the first season the Titans is actually together as a team. And it opens with, like, a character dying, Batman quitting, and all this stuff. And I'm like, what? A bunch of
non-Titans things.
It's like, what, is this Titans? Or is this just fandom?
It's like some, what? Like, weird ensemble, like, a Gotham-based, like, fan film that has, like, so way too much budget.
Well, on that note,
this team feels like it has a stronger direction so far. So.
It does. Okay, that's good to
if
hear.
If it keeps it up.
Okay, that's a long, that's a tough ask, though. For any other TV show, you'd be like, this is expected. And if it fails, it's just bad. For Titans, it's like, if it remotely keeps up, it will make a better season.
Like, I will be shocked if, like, if they, like, actually maintain, like, this.
Yes.
Direction we'll see, throughout though. The season, and if it falls off, it'll almost be like comforting. You know how like a lot of shows, like are like comfort food, like stuff like The Office. People like sitcoms like that. Titans is my comfort food. I like watching it. Just like it's always like, oh, like the show's falling apart again.
Exactly. Like old classic Titans. It is. It's exactly. It's comfort food. So rate the episode out of 10.
In general, I would say it's like a 5 out of 10. For Titans, it's like a 6 or 7 out of 10.
I would give it a 7. I thought like the first episode was really good. It was fun. Anyway, we're out of time, but it was really good. So speaking of DC Universe shows, we had a Doom Patrol trailer. Now, is it just me, or did you not realize Doom Patrol was coming out next month?
I had no idea until the trailer dropped.
Like, what?
Because I really kept up on season two and season three. I was surprised.
Like, what? I'm sorry. Like, that just really caught me off guard. Like, that was the problem. Is that was like, wait, it's out? Like, or it's coming? And the trailer told us basically nothing. Other than what seems to be the Brotherhood of Dada or whatever. Although, to be fair, I haven't actually finished Doom Patrol season two. Fight me all you want. I have three episodes left.
It seems like... Because, you know, Doom Patrol Season 2 was cut during, was cut one episode because of COVID. They basically never made the finale.
Yeah.
It seems like, from the trailer and what they've said about it, that Doom Patrol Season 2 would have originally ended with the team breaking up, even more than they already have.
Interesting.
And some external force would gather them together again.
For the third season.
So I'm assuming that's how this season will start. We'll get, like, the conclusion to the Candlemaker stuff, and then probably splitting up in the first episode, and then maybe they're going to try to make it more of a premiere for season three.
You know what I find so weird? Is it just me, or did, like, every single TV show that was filmed pre-COVID have, like, just the finale left to film before they got canceled?
I guess it must have just been the time that it
happened. Like, isn't that so weird? Because, like, if I recall correctly, like, Supergirl had to end on, like, the penultimate episode. Batwoman ended on the penultimate episode. The Flash ended on the penultimate episode. Like, all of these series ended, like, if it's, like, the pandemic had been, like, 1 week later,
we would have gotten
the finale
finished. Yeah.
Isn't that just weird?
It is.
Like, the number of superhero shows that ended on penultimate episodes.
Yes, it just...
And as Titans has proven to us, that's not a good sign.
I thought it actually worked for Supergirl.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure it did.
Because with the cliffhanger that I left on, I thought in that one situation, it worked, actually.
Yeah.
But everything it's not great because you're watching.
Yeah.
Because then it's just weird because then whenever all these shows...
Batwoman. Like, Batwoman ends on a cliffhanger that, like, they intended to have a season finale. And then they were like, well, I guess we can't.
Oh, my gosh. And then with the...
Ruby Rose quits So the first episode is like completely detached from all that chaos.
I find the first episode of Batwoman season 2 to be hilarious because it literally contains a scene where the main villain of season 1 just explains what her plan was going to be.
Yeah.
Season 1. And she's like, well, now I don't get to do it.
I was going to have the father kill, spoiler alert, by the way, I was going to have the father kill the daughter and then realize like really she killed the daughter. And it was going to be so good. But now, Tim, she's been burnt by a crashed plane. Like, yeah. Oh my God. What a weird story that show is.
I think the biggest problem with the COVID cutting off the finales is, for a lot of these shows, by the time the finales come up, like a year, like half a year later, you finally get the finale, and
year later,
I don't care anymore.
Yeah,
I don't even really remember what happened.
Did you know that Superman? That like, and here's the other thing, right? Did you know that Superman and Lois isn't even done yet?
That doesn't surprise me.
Didn't that begin in like April though?
Yeah, no, like, but CW shows usually start airing. No,
it didn't end in April. It began in January.
But like, they took a long break.
I know, but like, why? Why do they have to take these breaks? Just finish the season and then release it every week. Novel concept, I know.
That's never what CW does. The production always overlaps with the airing.
I know.
They're always filming it during the like first half of the show airing. So
I know.
And so, it's really weird because of COVID.
Tim Drake broke the internet this week. He asked the boy out. I love this. It is iconic. I've been begging for this for years. And everyone's
a lot of people have been begging it for years. Yes. I don't know what it is specifically about Tim Drake, but a lot of people have been begging for this for years.
I was so happy. No, like for legit, for the last like 2 years, anytime Tim Drake is a story with Connor, I'm instantly like, okay, is this the time they're going to do it? Is this the time they're going to do it?
No,
I'm always disappointed. And then like, I've convinced myself it just wasn't going to happen for a while. And
now it has.
Tinian said a line and he was like, Tim Drake's going to do something I've always wanted him to do since I was young. Since he was just introduced. When I was like still a teenager or like teenager or whatever, and little me would have loved it. And I'm like, well, Tinian's gay. My gut was telling me Tim Drake was going to come out.
And then issue four came out, and it was like, okay,
this is really heavily queer coded. And it's hard not to read this as a queer thing. And then we hit issue six, and it happened. Yay!
Finally. Is it just me, or has it felt like ever since their, what was it called, the DC bloodbath or whatever? Where, like, the entire structure of DC changed?
Oh, in with Future State? Ahead of Future State?
Yeah, ahead of Future State. Everybody like, got Marie fired.
Javens, like, the thing that killed 5G?
It feels to me that, like, ever since then, that they've been less scared to do things like this.
Yeah, I also think the Harley Quinn animated series helped. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, oh, definitely.
I think it was a big deal. And someone like James Tynion has had a big impact with DC because of how much high sales were. I'm sure, like, really advocated. But yeah, I do feel like this new era of DC's writing team or, like, editorial team has been much more inclusive. Mm-hmm. And I really do appreciate that. And this moment has been coming for a long time. And I'm finally glad they agreed to do it and let it happen.
I'm just interested to see where it goes.
I know, but that's an exciting feeling. I'm just excited to see where this friendship goes, where Tim Drake's exploration of his sexuality goes, and it will be exciting. You know, I was at Free Comic Book Day, and the person next to me in line was like, hey, can I subscribe to Urban Legends? And then I was like, wait, just a second. Before you subscribe to it, just so you know, number 7 is a futuristic anthology focused on Batman Beyond. And number 8 and 9 are tie-ins without Tim Drake in them. Just a heads up. And it's like, okay, when does Tim Drake start? And I'm like, number 10. He's like, okay, can I subscribe for number 10? And I was like, okay, look at me being a champion for people, helping people protect people's wallets. But yeah, like people are really excited for the Tim Drake reveal. And I'm really excited to see where this goes. And this is a second story of a number 6 issue of a Batman anthology comic, you know, and people have been talking about it. It was on trending on Twitter all day, like top 10 spots consistently.
Well, it's a pretty big thing. Major Batman character who's been around since, like, what, the 80s, 90s? Mm-hmm. 80s.
But I also love all the fan discussion that's like, you can't make a formerly, like, straight character bisexual or whatever. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. Like, the whole, like, you have to create a new character to have that, like, ethnicity represented sort of shit.
Mm-hmm.
It, well, specifically, it deals with sex. Like, it's always like that with sexuality. Like, it's never like that about race. Even
easier to do a story where
people are like race swapping or whatever. They're like, okay, we're annoyed, but whatever. It's like when it comes to sexuality specifically, people have this huge fear of characters they love having a different sexuality than they like to think they have.
It is, that is interesting. It probably doesn't help that there's probably more homophobic people than there are racist people.
Yeah.
I had to guess. And I'm also And also people like to relate to their characters, and they're like, no, I've seen Tim Drake since like the 90s, and I read him as a boy, and no, he can't have a different sexuality than me, or whatever.
Yeah. Okay, honestly, so this is an example of what I'm talking about, okay? Swapping. Where people are like, because I'm just pulled up, because I posted a thread about this, and there's all sorts of people who are like entering the community for the first time to complain. And he's like, oh, yeah. I've been collecting 60 years of Batman comics, and now, and with 30 plus years of evidence that are against Tim Drake being gay, he's now gay. And this he's not is even dumb.
Like, he's bisexual. Like, it makes perfect sense. And also, like, when has DC ever cared about like maintaining a good continuity?
And then he's like, DC needs to stop pandering to Twitter. And also, I have a problem with Tim Fock, with like the whole Fox family having a Batman person. And I wish Denny O'Neill were still in charge, because he knew how to do good comics. Oh, well, I see why people are going to Substack. Like, what?
Yeah, no, I'm sure that the... Wait, Tinian's the one who did this, right?
No, this is Megan Fitzmartin. But no, Tinian had a lot of editorial had like a lot of push.
And yeah, I'm saying like I really doubt Tinian of all people is leaving for this reason.
No, I don't think so. Well, speaking of that, we talked about some of the Substack stuff before we started showing. I don't really want to get too deep into it, but the big thing I do want to talk about is Tinian is leaving, right? So who is taking over
for Batman?
Yeah, who do you want to be the next Batman writer? Given the current state of Batman stories, which are interconnected and put together.
See, the problem is there's no person I really want to be a writer. There's like, usually I have like a pick. This time with the writers DC currently has, I don't dislike them, but there's just not one that sticks out to
me. There's not one. I think there's a couple I think I would be really excited for.
They'll probably get someone who's already working on, like, the interconnected Batman family.
That's what I'm thinking. Right? So, here's the thing. Okay. So, it's kind of been revealed. This is somewhat spoilers. We're going to talk about the solicits a little later. But one of the solicits, it's revealed that there's another Batman event coming in 2022. Say what you want about these Batman events. It actually sounds kind of interesting. It seems more like a Reign of X or, like, Dawn of X type, quote-unquote, event. Where it's more just like this is an era of Batman comics incoming called Shadow of the Bat. And it's sort of about when Batman leaves Gotham, what happens? And like, how does Gotham survive? And how do the heroes of the Bat family handle Batman leaving? And in many ways,
this is a thing we've seen before, though.
It is something similar. Although the whole idea is this time Batman's just leaving Gotham for some reason. We don't know why. But he's leaving Gotham.
Like, that, like, early on in No Man's Land, so, and with the fallout of Infinite Crisis. So this is a story that's been done before, but I presume they'll do it some...
It'll be a different version
way.
And, like, with this, I think this is a really good choice for, like, a story direction just in general. With the current strength of the Batman line, like, I feel like a lot of, like... One of the problems a lot of, I feel like, DC eras is they rely so heavily on the Batman story being the crown gem of, like, DC comics. Like, Snyder's run, Or I would say kind of King, or Rebirth, Batman Rebirth. Like, they were so reliant on Batman being the story for the Batman family that, like, yes, everything else just, like, suffered because of it. And I feel like with the Infinite Frontier era, it's really felt like Tynan's lifted up so many other comics to shine. He's created this environment where a Harley Quinn comic can be in continuity and compelling and fun and has, like, a direction to go that's interesting, you know?
It's almost like what I've wanted them to do for a while. Wanted to go back to how they did things in the 90s, which, yeah, I know sounds bad. Like, yeah, what can they go back to do the way they did things in the 90s? But what I meant by that is, back then, they had a really interconnected, like, lines for each of their characters.
Is it correct that, like, No Man's Land is, like, a 70-part comic story?
Oh, it's way more than that.
Yeah, but, like, that's so impressive. Like, generally, like, you kind of need to genuinely read this comics in order, or you can get lost. And I'm sure there's stuff that, like, you can kind of skip, right?
No, actually, No Man's Land, despite being, like, talked about as an event, most of it you don't really have to read in order. Like, there is some for, like, the Batman stuff, but for a lot of the other characters, it's just stuff that's concurrently going on at the same time.
Oh, like, for example, Cataclysm, right? 12, that's 16
Cataclysm
issues.
Is an event, so yes.
Yeah, you do need to read them in order. Although, every other issue is more important than the rest. Like, so, like, there, it's, like, a clear, like, oh, this, the Batman story and the Detective Comics story is, like, the important ones. But then, like, every other issue, every other part is, like, a smaller, like, while that was going on, this was also going on, you know? Yes. But it's really good, and I really enjoyed Cataclysm. But obviously, like, people talk about No Man's Land that way, and obviously I haven't read it, but the way it's, like, more collected like and that. Stuff is, like, in a clear, like, this is part one, this is part two, this is part three. And, like, to put on something like that, even if you don't actually need to read everything, like, is really cool. And I'd love to see DC Comics and the Batman line especially try to look more at that sort of stuff. And part of what I like is Batman leave, like, this is, I feel like the lines of Batman family is currently in a place where Batman leaving won't hurt the quality of the line.
Well, I'm sure they're not going to do Batman leaving as in we're never going to get another Batman story.
No, I mean, I'm sure we'll have a Batman comic.
Yeah,
like, I think there'll still be a Bruce Wayne comic, but yeah, Bruce Wayne will not be the defining gem of all Gotham stories. And I really think with the way the Batman stories are being told right now, and the sheer quality and, like, diversity of story and connectedness, there's a lot of room to grow and a lot of.
It almost feels like the Batman comics have collectively shifted from being a. From being just the Batman series, a bunch of Batman series, to being a more like an ensemble sort of story with a ton of different characters.
And that's part of what I love is this is neat. This is a neat,
I like it. I like the cohesion.
Yes, and
it's
the
my
story
favorite part. It just feels like a
and
decent
the story
product.
Choice. Yeah, enables this ensemble feel, right? Like,
It's not my favorite story. I think it's a little bland, but
I mean, we'll see how it's told. Oh, like the Tidian's run.
Yeah, it's just me being a snob, though, about comedy. I really do like the feel.
If we hadn't had Future State. And I mean that somewhat seriously, because there's almost like this, like, less interesting version. Like, the Magistrate's less interesting in part, because it's like, oh, we know what happens in Future State, and we don't think that's actually going to happen. But, like.
No, I find that more interesting, because, well, I thought it was cool for us to get all the stuff in Future State, which I have read all of now.
Love Future State, so good.
And then we get, like, in the main comics, we start to see some of that stuff start to happen and fold, and it's like, oh, is it going to go the same direction? Is it going to go a different direction? Probably the latter, but I wonder how.
Yeah.
So I think it's been very cool that way. Like, that, yeah, like I thought that was a really cool way to execute it.
And I think Fear State will be a really fun event. I think, like, there's a lot of stuff from the solicits that make this event feel really dense, but in a way that feels like these comics are all working with the same ideas. It's not like, oh, while this major invasion is happening, Batgirl's over here chilling out and discovering two clowns are in her neighborhood. Oh no. You know, like, it really feels like from the solicits, like, these stories and, like, these ideas that Tinian has are all going to find themselves in each of these different stories in impactful, important ways. Like, I don't know if you know this, but if you've been reading Catwoman lately, the Catwoman storyline, while in many ways not as not super important, like with Father Valley and stuff, but parts not important. There's a specific part of that story with Poison Ivy that like has been clearly building with future state, with Fear State in mind, but it's also been building with Harley Quinn in mind, where like Harley Quinn and Ivy will meet. And part of that will occur in this comic or in this through this plot thread that's been building in Catwoman. And that sort of stuff is just fucking cool. Like, I just love that kind of thing.
The interconnectedness.
Yes, exactly. That's what I want for my comic.
These characters are all in these series and they all have their own ongoing plot lines that intersect and everything.
Yes. So thinking
that's
about
what
like
I'm
who
saying.
I want.
It's what I used to yes. That's what I like about like DC Comics from a certain period of time. And it feels like they're finally doing that again for Batman. Yeah.
So my two big questions, and this is it. These are my only two thoughts, okay? One, if Tinian's leaving, who's taking over? And two, Mariko Tamaki's been writing a Bruce story, right? It's sort of a Batman story, but it's really a Bruce story. Where is her story going if Batman's leaving?
Is it
I'm
in
wondering
continuity?
But if Mariko Tamaki's story is in continuity.
Okay.
It's very good, too. No, I'm trying to wonder if Batman's leaving Gotham. What is the role of Detective Comics? If we have because currently, like, her story is sort of it's focused a lot on, like, Bruce and the Nakano. It's like the Bruce and Nakano pairing, if that makes sense.
It could, of course, continue to focus on Bruce, just no longer in Gotham.
Yeah, but do you think Mariko Tamaki is going to be writing that story? Or, like, that's my question. It's like, what is the plan for the Detective Comics and Batman books? And I know, like, Detective Comics is doing a lot of the heavy lifting in November, with, like, at the end of November, setting up the next sort of period of DC's period time, which includes, like, Arkham Tower, which will replace Arkham Asylum, which is an interesting idea. And there's, like, other stuff that they're, like, keeping under wraps.
Arkham Asylum's being replaced again.
But I'm wondering if Mariko Tamaki is going to be sort of running Shadow of the Bat as, like, the lead creative. If that makes sense. Because, like, I think she has the talent.
I think she's been part of the team.
Detective Comics run's been pretty good. Not my favorite Detective Comics run by any means, but it's had a really good, like, interconnected feel. In a way, it's been really cool. And the Hunter story was pretty good. The Vile stuff is fine. The Mr. Worst stuff is fine. But I really like the
overall
story.
Overall, it's okay.
And I think it's an 8. Like, it's a great story. It's not, like, top tier. It's not, like, Tinian's Detective by any means. And it hasn't had, like, an oh shit, like, this is a comic I need to pay all my attention to. But it's been pretty fun. So if Mariko Tamaki takes over Batman, I think it would be a good fit. And I'm excited to see that.
Yeah, I can definitely see it working. Yeah.
On that note, let's swap to Suicide Squad, which is on HBO Max now. And I saw it 2 weeks ago in previews, thanks to DC Universe. And it's so good.
I did not like it.
What?
And I knew
wouldn't. Whoa. Okay. Explain
you know
to me why.
I hate gore. I'm not a fan. I never have been a fan of gore. And this was a gore
of
movie.
Who? Oh, of gore.
Yeah, gore.
Oh, I thought you said
gore.
Like... Yeah,
violence.
Yeah. You don't like this kind of movie? Is it because you don't like this kind of movie?
I don't like this style of movie. I never
So you
have.
Don't like, do you not like Deadpool, then I take it?
Oh, no, I really hate Deadpool.
Okay. I mean, that makes some sense. So, like, you
don't
like
the
Harley Quinn animated series?
I don't have any animosity towards it. It's not like I hate it.
Do you not like the Harley Quinn animated series?
The Harley Quinn animated series was a very, very, very rare circumstance where I actually did enjoy it.
Did you not like Doom Patrol?
Because I really liked a lot of the. It was very violent, I thought the comedic tone was like, it was the kind of comedy I liked, and
I thought Suicide
the
Squad
characters
was super
were really
funny,
good too.
Though.
Like I really liked Harley and
Ivy's
relationship and stuff.
Okay, so you think it's too gory? But
how
do you feel
about
the plot? I don't
think it's too gory. I think it's too gory for me to like it personally.
How do you feel about the plot, though? Because you've seen the whole thing, right?
Yes, I have.
Yes. How do you feel about the plot?
I thought it was... this is definitely one of the strongest DCEU movies.
Yep.
Absolutely. By far.
I think it's my favorite.
I don't think I have to say that. It might even be the best. Like, what competition
so
does
it might
have?
Be your
Wonder
favorite.
Woman, which is okay.
You're saying it might be the best Suicide Squad movie. Like, Suicide Squad might be the best DC movie, but you don't like it.
Yeah, no. Like,
that's a ringing
it, like...
endorsement for all of DC's movies.
No, it's just my weird personal hang-ups about gore. But it's a very James Gunn movie, too. It's very Gunn.
Yeah, it is very
style.
James Gunn movie. I loved it.
It's got the same humor. It's got the same mm-hmm. tone.
Yeah.
Like, if you like stuff like Guardians of the Galaxy, but like the violence of Deadpool, then this is the movie for you.
Guardians of the
it
Galaxy.
It was a lot
Deadpool.
Of fun, except whenever there was gore, which was frequently. And then I was like,
If you could get a PG-13 version of this movie, would it be better?
No. Well, because the movie's built around the gore.
Yeah.
Like, it feels weird to take it away. Like, no.
I don't really think of it as that gory.
Product.
So, like...
Just personally, it's not something that's appealing to me. That doesn't mean
so
it's,
let
like
me think
that.
About, like, the gory moments, okay? So, you've got when... Okay, actually, never mind. I said this would be mild spoilers, so I'm not going to go too into it. But I don't really think of it as that gory.
Like, when it is, like, it really is sometimes.
Yeah, but, like, it's not, like, over-the-top gory for humor. It's just like, it's like a holy shit, oh, instant moment. Like, that's kind of like an oh shit, and then it's over. Like,
constant
when,
shit,
like this is a light spoiler. When Waller kills somebody with the bomb in their head, it's gory, but it's not that gory, and it's what you'd expect, right?
Yeah, I just have a weak stomach
and
for, like, stuff
compared
like
compared to, like, the boys? Like,
oh,
I
yeah,
think
no,
you can't even attempt the boys, then, because that is extra, that is super, super gory.
This felt like the story of this movie felt
yeah.
like a very, very basic Suicide Squad movie. I
yeah.
don't know what I was expecting. I was expecting it to be a little bit more, maybe. But I think it's fine to have a pretty generic Suicide Squad story.
I don't
especially
know,
for a
like, it's just fun.
Movie.
Like, you have the Harley Quinn moment, which was awesome. Like, that Harley Quinn chapter where, like, with the birds. So good. Like, you know
I like all the
about,
Harley
right?
Quinn stuff in this movie.
All the Harley Quinn stuff is amazing. I'm continually so impressed.
Also,
by
I liked how
Harley
it acknowledged
Quinn.
The other movies. I was kind of worried
yes.
this would be disconnected, but no, it really feels
disconnected
like
enough. Yeah,
it's in the universe. Like, it's a standalone experience, a soft reboot, grid jumping on point.
Like, to forget
but
it doesn't.
But it doesn't ignore Harley's development.
No, it definitely
Birds
doesn't.
Of Prey
yeah.
and stuff.
And Birds of Prey also amazing. I actually think I don't know, which I think, like, Birds of Prey and Suicide Squad are such different movies, it's hard to compare them.
Oh, yeah, no. Like,
which is funny, because they're also both have Harley Quinn as sort of, like, this big central character. But I think one thing I love about Suicide Squad is I just cared about everybody. Like I like Ratcatcher was really fun. Bloodsport
were
was
really
cool.
Fun.
Polka Dot Man way surprised me. A little gimmicky, but... His name is Polka Dot Man, what do you expect?
Yes, like his
right?
whole thing is that he's weirdly gimmicky.
Yes. So, I'm trying to think. So, like, I'd absolutely recommend people watch it. I think it's the best DC movie. However, I do want to say this. I set my expectations really high, and they met my expectations. They did not succeed. So I came out of that movie being a little like, oh, that's
yeah,
it?
No, I'm pretty much
and then, like,
place.
I thought about it, and it was like, no, that's what I expected the movie to be. I just had such high expectations that when I met them, I was like, okay, that's it. Because I wanted it to exceed my expectations, but met them. But my expectations
yeah.
were greatest, like, probably the greatest DC movie yet.
I
right?
liked it.
And when I went in with those expectations, it was great, you know? And, like, you can say, like, oh, it's gory or whatever, but it really met my expectations. For a movie that
that's
said
just
anyone
me.
Can
that's
die,
just me personally, the
that
gore
marketed
thing.
It as like there's tons of characters, they're all not gonna live. Spoiler alert: they don't live. All live, you know. But it was fun, and like it's surprised. Some of the things that like happened really surprised me.
I liked Peacemaker
fun.
More than I thought I would.
I'm excited for the Peacemaker move with Peacemaker TV
yeah,
show.
Yeah, has this movie affected your excitement for the Peacemaker show?
I'm more excited for it for sure, partly because James Gunn's doing it, but I still think it's such a weird choice. Like, really?
I thought it was
going to
be a prequel.
No, the Peacemaker TV show?
Yeah, it's like a sequel now, isn't it?
Yeah, or it's the next. It's like a, I would consider a Suicide Squad 1.5 or something. Like, it's an after Suicide Squad, dot, dot, dot. But I'm curious, because, like, I think that's smart for DC to have some, like, TV, like, stuff spin out of the movies.
Yeah.
I think Marvel's had a lot of success with it, and I really want to see DC do the same. I think the Batman, which is coming up in, like, 6 months, unless
it's that has the GCPD show.
Yeah, it will have got, which will be interesting in the era of Black Lives Matter, for sure. But, like,
oh yeah,
Gotham, like, Central. Have we even heard anything about
the GCPD show since it was announced?
Gotham Central or whatever? No,
I wouldn't be surprised. Like,
I assume it's still coming. I assume it's been written. I don't think they've been filming it, but they're still filming Batman. Like, my understanding is they're in, like, Batman's taking forever for all sorts of weird random reasons.
Like a pandemic striking down.
Yeah, minor detail of the pandemic. Okay, so DC released their solicits. And there's a lot to talk about, from the conclusion of Fear State to the end of Tinney's run and the Dark Knights of Steel by Taylor. So we've already talked sort of about the Fear State and all that sort of stuff. So I wanted to ask you how you feel about Dark Knights of Steel.
I don't know. I don't actually have any opinions on it whatsoever.
Really?
Really.
You've no opinion on the Middle Ages Tom Taylor book?
It's going to be pretty much what I think it's going to be.
Wow. Also, I am incredibly salty because I posted a whole Twitter thread with all of my thoughts on the solicits, including from, like, taking not every book talked about, but a lot of the books talked about, especially Infinite Frontier stuff specifically. And Twitter decided each, like, even though it's like a comment thread, it decided that each of them should be like a separate post on my feed. So all I wanted to be was like, the DC Comics solicits have a ton of news. Here's my thoughts. And if you click on it, you can see all my thoughts. But then
instead you got like this series of posts.
Yes, and I was like, oh god. But they're all comments, so it's annoying. So just a couple things. I'm just scrolling through them to see if I have anything to say. I think Anti-Oracle for Fear State is an incredibly interesting villain idea. Part of it is because I think we're entering a discussion around like the power of truth and effect and the way it's easily manipulated. And it gives me a lot of those vibes. And so I think it's really interesting. I also, they tease that someone that will shake the way we view Gotham. And so I'm really wondering.
I never trust them when they say that.
I know. But I'm wondering if it's someone like Vic Sage or someone just off the beaten path. It's like, has like a role already, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Also, didn't they announce the new Wonder Woman book?
They did. I'm pretty sure it's out of continuity, though. Wonder Woman Evolution by Stephanie Phillips, who's writing Harley Quinn. But I'm pretty sure it's out of continuity. It just gives me those vibes based off
of what... That wasn't what I was thinking of anyways.
Yeah, based off the direction of the Wonder Woman line, which, by the way, so good. I don't know if you've
been following Wonder Woman. Yeah, I've been wanting to talk about Wonder Woman during this podcast, but I haven't had a chance to bring it up.
I am blown away by the quality of the Wonder Woman stories.
I feel like Wonder Woman should already be a bigger line than it is.
Yes, and there's, I really feel Wonder like they're Woman giving books. It that love right now. Like, Wonder Girl, I know it's only 2 issues in, it's taking forever to release, which is kind of a problem. Great book. Wonder Girl is
really
awesome.
Enjoying the Wonder Woman stuff.
Yara,
I'm not usually want someone who picks up Wonder Woman in the...
Like, I have had more fun reading Wonder Woman than I've had with any other Wonder Woman book by far. Like, it's just been a cool book. And it's gotten me to care about the run and the direction of the story. And I'm not in love with Janice as a villain, like, whatever. But, like, it's been a fun mystery. It's taken us on a fun number of places. The pacing's really fun. Becky Cloonan's really done a great job. And then the Wonder Girl has been, like, this almost like a Bent-esque comic where they're, like, meanwhile, in Banna Migdal, which is where Artemis and her, like, hunter and, like, her Amazons from, like, if you've been reading, like, Red Hood and the Outlaws is from.
I
and
have
then
not
you
been.
Got which, but like Banna Migdal, and then you got in Themyscira, and then you flash over to Hera on Mount Olympus,
it's
and then
like you an flash over. Movie.
Yes, exactly. And then you go back to Brazil, and then you go to the Justice League,
jumping
Center.
Around the world,
and it feels like this event comic where, like, you, it's like the whole idea is like something's about to come.
Dun, yeah, dun, it feels dun, like dun, big dun, things dun, are dun. Happening.
Yes, and then the Wonder Woman book, while it's very disconnected as well, has been really fun. And I've been really enjoying the sort of, like, look through. I love the Valhalla stuff. I enjoyed the Olympus stuff and the Graveyard of Gods. And I know now, I haven't read the most recent issue, but I know we're doing some multiverse shenanigans. And, like, it's going to be, like, a race through, like, the different realms and regions of the DC Universe, including, like, Gem World and Bizarroverse. Like, this is, like, to conclude the opening arc. And I'm, like, completely sold on this. I think it's a fun choice. Also, as a writer who's, like, who wants a chance to write a bunch of stuff, this is, like, a perfect sort of idea. It's, like, because a lot of writers say when they get to start, they, like, want to cram as much stuff as possible because they want to say they wrote about this character. And Becky Cloonan is kind of saying, I want to have written about every single realm of existence in the DC Universe. But I kind of love it.
Hey, as long as it's good, I don't care.
Yeah.
It's not like
we haven't really talked about the Superman books. I'm a little all over the place with Superman books.
I'm not feeling them. I'm not like...
So, first of all, Superman Son of Kal-El is maybe my favorite Superman comic of, like, in continuity stuff.
Well, like, there's only been, like, an issue.
It's only been one issue, but that issue's so good.
But, like, I feel like this is going to end up being one of my... I'm going to be so disappointed if the second issue isn't this good. Yes, because I feel like this, right now, somebody said this in the Discord server or something. Like, this feels like one of the comics that, like, I wish I could jump into the future and read the omnibus of.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it gives, like,
I'm very impatient
for this comic. I want it to stay this good and just be amazing. And I know the solicits, they reveal, like, Lex Luthor is coming back into this comic soon, and, like, with issue number 5, and with the annual after number 5 or whatever. And I'm, like, sold on this. Like, I love the premise. If you aren't following it, it's sort of, like Kal-El is a millennial, is, like, a Gen Z person. Like, his views on what justice is and, like, his role as Superman is very different. Instead of truth, justice in the American way, he's about truth, justice in a better world. He talks a lot about how there are lots of issues Superman
can't address. Which I thought was an interesting thing to bring up because despite the whole truth, justice in the American way, really, Superman hasn't been interpreted that way in
for a while,
decades, because Superman is generally about, like, the whole world, and he even gets, like, upset when anybody tries to get, like, there was that whole thing during the New 52.
And, like, part of it is he's not only Superman, like, because of the son of Kal-El, but he's also the son of, like, one of the most political, like, Pulitzer Prize-winning writers of all time in the DC Universe, which is Lois Lane.
Gosh, this is, like, such a great premise for the story. There's so much they could do with it.
And, like, I've always thought that older John Kent has a lot of potential. But I felt like Bendis never had any idea what to do with that potential. And
Bendis was just trying to... I don't even know what his Superman run was.
We can literally talk for hours about how bad that run is. It's so bad.
Like, I feel so bad, because how bad this run is, more than
a triple tie-in between Event Leviathan, The Infected, and the Year of the Villain all at the same time.
The Year of the Villain.
And he's, like, revealing his identity. And it's, like, a tie-in to, like, the identity reveal. And I'm just like, what is this comic?
To be fair, a lot of that wasn't helped by Year of the Villain in general being an Nightmare School writer.
But still, like, you have to do pretty hard to fuck it up that bad. Like, I'm sorry. you know, but I'm on the Superman line. Like, I'm enjoying... But I'm really enjoying the War World stuff.
But aside from Son of Kal-El, I just haven't been enjoying much Superman stuff. Like, Superman the Authority? I don't care.
How do you feel about No, I don't care about Superman the Authority. That's whatever. I don't even think it's in continuity. I think it's just a reintroduction of who the Authority are. When they say, like, there'll be spinoffs, it's like that. It's just like, now you know who the Authority are. Now we don't have to spend a long time explaining it. Which, honestly, sure, I don't exactly know who the Authority are. I know a lot of the characters in the Authority, but a book about that really isn't a problem for me. Like, fine. But also, I could care less about Superman the Authority. I will say, like, the Action Comics book's been pretty fun. The first issue's bad of that run, but that's just a tie-in. It's like part two of a two-part story. And then, like, the War World stuff's been really fun. But I will say, like, the issue where the Super Sons appear in Action Comics was actually really good. and was sort of like a tone of what I really wanted that book to be. And I really think part of the problem is what this book is going to be is sort of like this Mongol, like, deep exploration of the war world, where, like, Philip Kennedy Johnson's talked about, like, he wants to do, like, D&D war world, where, like, he wants to have, like, that very fleshed out world that, like,
which
Superman's
I think is a great
look.
Idea, because I've always
which
loved
I'm
the
down
idea.
For, but we gotta get there. We gotta get there. And, like, in the meantime, yeah. It's like, they're trying to introduce war world as a threat, which, sure, I get it. You gotta explain why Superman wants to leave to go to war world. And then you also gotta, then you also need to set up this authority stuff, right?
Yeah.
And, like, sure, I get why. I'm okay with that. But I'm just excited to get to this meat of the potatoes. That, like,
I just feel like
to.
It's just kind of meandering. It doesn't really feel like it has a direction. From what the writer said, it does sound like there is a direction.
There is, yeah.
I'm just not getting it inside the comic yet. I'm not...
Well, part of it is, I don't know if you know, there's like, this really great line where Jonathan Kent's, like, I've been to the future. And it's like the one time they've ever mentioned if Ben is Legion of Superheroes. He's like, I was in the future and I know my dad dies. And the details are very vague about what happens. But they're all lining up sort of. And he's like, the war between the US and Atlantis, the coming of new Kryptonians, war world invading. And like it's like very vague. But it's clear that something's going to happen. He knows that, like, whatever's about to happen is about to result in his father, quote-unquote, dying. Although I think the answer will really be disappearing. And so for him, he's, like, dealing with that mortality. And that was just really powerful. And then you've got, like, a great Superman son of Earth, Kal-El, which is just phenomenal, right? And so I've been enjoying the Superman stuff. I'm not sold on the Midnighter story. I didn't like the Superman story. I didn't like the, like, which is, I think, like, the one who fells or whatever. I'm not in love with Superman and the Authority. Although it's not, like, terrible. Like, there's been much worse Morrison books. Like, if you don't like Morrison, it's at least tolerable. Then the Action Comics, the Superman back issue was awful. With, like, Jimmy Olsen and, like, the Bejectress. Like, oh, God, that was rough. And there's a lot of annuals in the Batman line, including the end of the season, or the first arc ending of Justice League Dark with Infinite Frontier, which I think is cool. It's, like, Justice League Dark annual. Aquaman the Becoming is dealing with the abandoned West Coast Titans Tower. Which I just really like as, like, a, like, connectedness thing. Because I know, like, there is a Titans Tower, but it's the different Titans Tower. And I just really like what they're going to be doing. Like, we're getting three Aquaman books. Like, stop and think about that for a second. They're all miniseries. But we are getting three Aquaman books.
This is more content than Aquaman fans have had in decades.
Like, people have been complaining forever about how, like, for all of Infinite Frontier, about how there's no Aquaman content. And they're like, Williamson was like, hey, there's multiple Aquaman projects in the works. Just be patient. And it's here. And it's like, I'm excited. We're on the verge of some, I hope, really good stories. Because the secret with Aquaman is there's no such thing as a bad Aquaman comic. Like, I haven't actually.
No, there is.
Yet.
Oh, God.
I meant like the last decade.
Like, okay, because I was thinking, like, have you read Sub Diego?
Oh, no. Thank you. Not that stuff. But, like, and seriously, like, in the last decade, there hasn't been a single bad Aquaman comic, really. There's been some stuff.
Aquaman's been surprisingly solid.
Like, it's always been that one that no one buys, but it's always been great. Kelly Sue DePonte's
run. Always been
run,
great,
Dan
but it's always
Abnett's
been.
John's,
it's always been solid.
Jeff John's run. Like, these runs have all been pretty good. And it's, like, a very consistent character, at least in the last decade. And if they can make that into a line, I am beyond belief thrilled, right?
Yeah.
This is just a random complaint about this solicit. We have, like, solicits for December week 2. Like, comics not coming out until, like, December 14th.
Yeah.
What is that about?
I was talking to someone else, about it, and apparently it's because of the shift to Tuesdays or whatever. Apparently that messed up when solicits happen.
No, but like, why December of week two? Like, that's just, but like, not every comic is getting their week two stuff. Like, we don't actually know most of the stuff coming out in December. But some of the stuff just has a week two version. Like, we just know the set what's coming in that week two.
It is weird. Like, DC solicits have been weird.
They've been all over the place.
For the entirety of Infinite Frontier. They've been late. Sometimes they just don't solicit some stuff.
Well, so, like, Blue and Gold, for example, is taking a break in November. Like, that's a 7-part series, right?
Yeah, it's not uncommon for their 7-part series to sometimes take a break.
No, it's not uncommon, but, like, that is a thing, right? Yeah. I don't know if you know this, but in Urban Legends number 6, other than the Tim Drake story, which stole the show, there's a Deathstroke Incorporated prelude. Did you know that?
Yeah.
And, like, this prelude's pretty good. I liked it.
It was okay.
I like, obviously they're setting this up, right? But the interesting thing is, they revealed that, like, Talia al Ghul. Yeah, but the interesting thing is, they revealed Talia al Ghul is, like, the villain of, like, or is, like, one of the villains of this run. And I'm just starting to think about this. Talia's in 4 comics, okay? 3 of them are written by the same writer, Joshua Williamson, who's in charge of, like, the big mega direction of the line right now, like, the cosmic, like, the multiversal direction of the line, right?
Yeah.
What is he planning with Talia? Because you know he's planning these things together, and he's not letting her just exist in, like, these
stories, Talia, right? Seems to be getting up to a lot.
Like, she's running, she's, like, one of the watchers of the multiverse or whatever. She's, like, in Robin. She's been in Deathstroke. She's in Checkmate. Like, it's a lot. Like, what is her sort of plan? And I'm just interested in that, you know?
I have no idea, but I am interested to find out.
There's definitely a story there, and that's the bigger point, yes. Right? Have you read any Future State Gotham?
No, I have not.
Okay, so
I read all the original line of Future State, but not the Gotham.
Yeah. Future State Gotham, actually, if you read all the Future State Batman books, it's really good. The problem is it's black and white, so it was a bit of a turnoff at first. But once I was able to get myself over that...
I'm not bothered by black and white. There's plenty of
But once I got myself over that, I really enjoyed Future State Gotham. If you like the Future State Batman stuff, which I really did, it connects on a lot of the threads from those books.
Like, black and white comics is usually what, like, indie books do?
Yeah.
Like, why is DC doing it now?
I mean, it's like a manga-inspired story, if that makes sense.
Okay, so, like, is it a stylistic choice?
Yes, it is a stylistic choice.
Okay, that makes sense, because, you know, I'm not a big reader of manga, but a lot of it's in black and white, right?
It deals a lot with, like, for example, Tim Drake becoming immortal in the Future State book. Like, he's there, and, like, they reference that plot line, and they're very honest about making sure the things they talked about in the various Future State books are coming true, and there's still a lot of question marks, but, like, it's very clear that they're bringing a lot of the stuff in, and I really like it.
I just think it's interesting that we're still getting Future State stuff, because Future State was just a way to recycle unused 5G content.
Yep.
And just a short event to, like...
Although I'm starting to feel like it wasn't. Things. I'm really starting to feel like it wasn't. Because the more I, like, look and, like, find out about 5G, the more I'm like, no, it wasn't quite. Like, for example, how do you feel about Green Lantern's run so far?
Haven't read it.
Oh, really? Interesting. Really? This is a fascinating story. So, basically, the whole idea, okay, is it starts with, like, this Bendis United Planets. Like, what is the role of the Green Lanterns within the United Planets sort of thing? And then all hell breaks loose. And, like the whole thing is it's, like, a Teen Lantern John Stewart story, Simon Baz story. And then, like, also you have, like, Joe, what's her last name, from Far Sector is in it. And, like, sort of, like, at some point the story basically splits into 2-parters. So it's, like, you get 20 pages of Joe, of, like, Teen Lantern and Joe Mullane or whatever her name is. And then you get, like, 20 pages or, like, 10 pages of John Stewart on, like, his own different sort of storyline. And the John Stewart stuff is okay. It's fine. the like Teen Lantern story is amazing.
Hey, I'll check it out. Oh, Green Lantern.
Have you been reading Bendis?
No.
Surprisingly, it's not terrible.
Is it good?
Is it good? I like it at times. And then they bring in Steinmar to fight the Justice League, and you're like, oh god. And then, like, there's some good moments, like the Naomi stuff is good. I enjoyed that story more or less. The Justice League Dark story is pretty good. And then there's, like, stuff with United Planets, like, building their own Justice League that's kind of fun. But, the story isn't bad. It's not bad. That's the answer, okay? Like, there have been much... Like, the only thing...
Yeah, but that's
like,
what
really
Justice League
like,
usually
I was, like,
Justice League usually neutral. Isn't that bad, but it's also...
No, whoa. I've read a lot of bad Justice League stories. I've read more bad Justice League stories than read good ones. So, I don't know.
I've read more good ones than I've read bad ones.
The only good run... The only good Justice League run I've ever read was Snyder's run, and that falls apart at the end, so I don't know.
Oh my gosh, Snyder's run was... what I want Justice League to be, like early on, that's what I want it to be. I want it to feel like one of the most important books of DC because it should be. Instead, Justice League feels like a weird ensemble book with all the other characters and doesn't have any relevancy to the plot ever.
So, I was going back to the Wonder Woman line. Nubia and the Amazons is coming out, and I'm really excited.
Yes, that's the book I was talking about.
That is the mini series I am most looking forward to this year. Like, Vida Ayala is doing it. She's sort of like the top up-and-coming writer at just Marvel and DC in general. Her work has been very consistently good. Or not her work, their work. Sorry, they didn't pronounce. And
also, I'm just excited for more Wonder Woman content. I think the stuff that's been coming out recently is very good, and I just want more.
And they've been building, like Infinite Frontier has this whole Wonder Woman section with, like, focus on Nubia and Hippolyta. And it was really fun. And it was like, okay, I really like this. And then when we find out that they're doing like a Nubia and the Amazon story, I was like, I'm sold. And then like the Hippolyta, I think like the part of probably the biggest failure of the Wonder Woman line has been the Hippolyta stuff. But that's probably because she hasn't had that much of an impact. But like Vida Ayala's work is something I'm really excited for. And there's a lot of like, and like, Wonder Girl has a little bit of a tease with some of the Nubia stuff to expect. But, like, I'm really excited to dive into the stories. And so I'm really excited for that. Have you been reading the Suicide Squad book?
No.
So this is a really interesting book. So I've read more or less everything. I'm a little behind the Suicide Squad book. But it's interesting because, like, it's, like, 50% crossovers and 50% Suicide Squad story. Okay. So... okay. Example, issue 3 was a Teen Titans Academy, was a Titans Academy crossover. Issue 6 is a Swamp Thing crossover. Issue 5, I guess, is a Crime Syndicate, is a sort of a Crime Syndicate crossover. Like they reference stuff from the Crime Syndicate's miniseries. Issue 8, which they, 7 and 8, which they just confirmed and released lists for, are a Green Lantern crossover where the Suicide Squad is going to build a space version to get something from Oa.
That's not interesting.
This book is really interesting. Like I think in some ways the premise of a cross book that's 50% crossovers is really healthy for the overall universe of creating a cohesive feel.
Suicide Squad is a good book to do that with too, since it's a bunch of it's like a series of missions. You can really work a lot of crossovers into there.
It
helps tie Infinite Frontier together, I guess.
Oh, by the way, one more thing, going to the Green Lantern stuff since we're still on there. If you enjoyed the Green Lantern Jessica Cruz story from Future State, that is sort of the route they're taking with a lot of this. Like basically every Green Lantern story but the John Stewart story from Future State is the kind of vibe of this French of like what's to expect. And then the John Stewart story is less similar, but like it's kind of in the same vibe, if that makes sense. But it's much better written than whatever the Future State John Lantern's or John Stewart's story was, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, like, I really enjoyed it. Like, there's a lot of really cool stuff. But one of the things I think is really interesting about the Green Lantern story is that they're talking about John is going to be fighting the potential future states. Future states, in quote. So what does that mean? Like, I'm very, like, is this, like, they're fighting to prevent a future state version from occurring? I don't know. Okay, so I have a couple more. I have, like, three more thoughts. Okay. One, Titans Academy is phenomenal. I just love it. With all my heart.
It's a lot of fun.
It is maybe my favorite book in the entire line. It's just so good. I love the characters. I love the mystery. The yearbook was phenomenal. Like, the Stitch story was just one of my favorite stories of the year. There's just so much great stuff in there, and it's like, it feels so fresh and different, and I love it. But they're addressing Roy's return to life with number 9, so that's fun. And then one of the last two major thoughts. Did you know Joelle Jones is leaving art duties on Wonder Girl? I'm both heartbroken and very thankful for this.
I did not know.
Yeah. Because here's the thing. The book is taking so long to come out because Joelle Jones is taking forever on the art. We all know that. Her leaving the art is probably for the best for this book's like coming out. But I'm sure for someone like Joelle Jones, it kind of sucks because I know she like really cares about this character and has done a really great job creating just beautiful art, right?
The art is really good.
And finally, this is just a complaint for me as a reviewer. I'm going to be trying to review as many of the Infinite Frontier trades as I can. But there are 7 books coming out in the first 2 weeks of December alone. Urban Legends Volume 1, Batman Superman Volume 1, or just the Archive of Worlds, Green Lantern Volume 1, Harley Quinn Volume 1, Nightwing Volume 1, Superman Red and Blue Volume 1, and Wonder Woman Volume 1. And I am not looking forward to trying to follow all those Volume 1s and review them. But I'm also excited too, because I love talking about, like, I love a lot of these books. Some of them are rougher than others, but I love them overall. You know?
So, how are you feeling overall about Futures, not Future State, Infinite Frontier?
I'm really positive on it. I am loving the direction. I think there's a lot of cohesiveness across the board. I think every character's, like, I think most of the books are great. Suicide Squad I'm not in love with, but I also haven't read it recently all the way. People say Swamp Thing's really good. I haven't read it, and that, like, I fell off on that one, but people really like it. The cosmic stuff has been great. The Infinite Frontier story, and with like Justice Incarnate, which, by the way, another thing coming out in November is Justice Incarnate. But like the Joshua Williams story has been pretty good. I'm not in like complete in love with Darkseid as the main villain again, but like in some ways it makes sense, right? Because like Darkseid, since really Justice League Odyssey, has had plans, right? And Justice League Odyssey was sort of him saying, okay, peace out, bitches. And him, like, trying to hide out. But, like, it was clear, like, Darkseid as a character was going to come back in some regard, right? And I think him saying, hey, Darkseid's been hiding for a while. It's time for him to give another attempt at taking the universe. I'm good with the stuff with Elseworld or with the Elseworld or whatever I'm intrigued by. I like the Psycho Pirate Infinite Frontier story. It was really cool. Where, like, Psycho Pirate spent his entire life trying to figure out sort of, like, who's at the end. And he thinks he's at the end of, like, society or whatever. And he's actually, and it's, like, tried to, like, escape society or existence or whatever, reality or whatever. And he finds himself in this blank space of whiteness. But he's like, oh, I finally made it outside of the universe. But then you, like as of, like, you scroll out, and it's and where he is he's the period on the page of Darkseid is. And which looks the exact same as Mr. Miracle's Darkseid is. And I was so shocked, and I loved it. And I think, like, Darkseid as, like, a story has a lot of potential. And I'm like, as long as it's different from before, which it really seems like it is, I'm down for a Darkseid story. I'm a little hesitant. I think it's my biggest hesitant. As I've been really loving the story that they've been telling with regards to the overall line. I think there's a lot of cool moments. Shazam, talking about, like, in Shazam, which, by the way, great book. If you love Infinite or Teen Titans Academy, you have to read Shazam. It's so good. It says, has a line where he's like, the central power battery is in disarray and the Speed Force is broken and this is happening and now the Rock of Eternity isn't anywhere. I'm worried we're approaching a crisis. And that moment was like a, oh shit, it's like, this is big. Cause it felt like there was a lot of connectivity and like, I really enjoying that. And I think the overall direction of these stories are great. My big worry is that with all the direction of these individual stories being so great and them doing a good enough job connecting with each other, I'm worried that the big overall plot will really interfere with what's been a really great story. Like sometimes big events really help those lines and see the companies thrive, right?
I'm but actually like, less worried about it than I usually am.
I know, I am too. But like, I'm worried that Darkseid's arrival will stop all the comics in their track and really sort of hurt what could otherwise be. Or like, I would say, I don't know what their plans are for Darkseid with the future, but I'm worried about a big event in 2022 because I need DC to take a break on big events. I'm okay with small things. What? I mean, sort of. They're coming. But like, that's about it. The Batman story. But I do feel like I'm worried because like, we just finished like last year, Dark Knight or Metal, right? And part of the problem is another story on the scope of Metal is not what I really want yet. Like, give it a couple more years. Yeah. Like, at least another year or two. Like, I love DC, but I want those big multiversal stories to feel epic and huge.
And less frequent.
And like, I feel like they're still a little too frequent. And there's still a lot of time. Like, I think what Joshua Williamson's doing with the setup and writing these stories has been really cool. Like, he's said very clearly that, like, one of the goals of the line is that whenever they tease something and, like, a big story, like, they're going to kick up on it as soon, like, sooner rather than later. They're not just going to let things dangle while they tease it out, you know, like they did in Rebirth, right? So, for example, he said, like, eventually, like, Ollie will reunite with Roy and sooner rather than later, and they will reunite with Connor sooner rather than later, right? And, like, they're not going to hold off and have Connor be hidden for, like, multiple, like, years before, like, they finally reunite, you know? And
before someone decides to actually do that story.
Yes, and, like, even, like, the stories I haven't really talked about today, like, the Flash story is really good. I like what they're doing with Wally. It's nice to have a Wally book again that's, like, actually just Wally as the Flash. And overall, I've just been really positive on, like, a lot of these great stories. And I think the Wonder Woman story beyond them all has been really the, like, top book that's, like, just blown me away. Like, the franchise of Wonder Woman is winning by far. And I just love that. Because I feel like Wonder Woman as a franchise doesn't get the love it deserves.
Yeah. I mean, it probably helps with those movies now. So DC wants to push it. But I think it's been very good. It feels like Wonder Woman is starting to fulfill the potential the series has, especially with the spinoffs and everything.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
And I'm feeling positively about Infinite Frontier. Over this era of DC, I like it. I'm not as excited for the future as I was early on in Rebirth.
Yeah.
I have more optimism back then than I do now. But I also but have I feel more like optimism the stories than are more I do now than I did a year ago. So,
yeah. So I feel like the right stories direction. Are more consistent in like a really good way. Like I like most of the stories in the line a lot. And I feel like whereas Rebirth had lots of great stories but was missing that connectivity, I really feel like this is setting itself up much better for success in the future. And, like, the cosmic stuff with the United Planets has been, like, everything that takes place in space has had some relation to the United Planets, which has been cool from, like, a world-building and, like, a connectivity perspective. And overall, I'm just really, really positive. And it's nice to have good comics again. Also, talking about Future State real quick. Future State was really fun. I'm a little worried that there are lots of stories I enjoyed, but I do not want to see the entire line be like this. Right? like, for example, Green Lantern specifically is one of them. I do not want the John Stewart story to be the story of the line. Like, I don't want every story to be like the John Lantern story. Like, it wasn't great, well told. It was very confusing and hectic. And there was a lot of it I didn't like. But, like, if Wonder Girl became, like, the Wonder Girl Future State story, I'm okay with that, right? But there's just certain ones I'm like, I really hope that Future State is just what it is, which is an alternate version of what could have happened, with it sort of being, like, a lot of setup and tonal pieces for what to expect for the future.
It seems like Future State is the future which we're going to see prevented. Because they set up a lot of lines for people in the present who know about what that future is going to be. And presumably, it will not go that direction. And of course, we're going to see some... I presume we're going to see, like, Wonder Girl become more of who she is.
Yeah.
And stuff like that, but I don't think we're going to see, like, we're not going to see that world.
Yeah.
I don't think we're going to see it come to fruition.
Yeah, I don't know. I think, overall, we will see a lot of the Future State stuff come to fruition some way or another. I think we've already really seen that. But it's like, for example, I think the Wonder Girl John Kent stuff is going to come up sooner rather than later. If I had to guess, we'll see it around issue 12 of Wonder Girl. Like, I think it's coming. It's going to be a little bit, but I think stuff like that's really important that, like, Future State really did a great job with. Like, Superman Wonder Woman from Future State is one of the better books, right? And I think, like, part of what made it work so well is just they have a fun dynamic. And it was a fun story. And I want to see their friendship grow as, like, just Future State, Justice League sort of worked with, right?
Mm-hmm.
I also want to see more of the non-binary Flash, which we haven't really seen since Future State. But, like, we have seen them. Like, they exist in comics now. We just haven't really seen them yet. And then I'm excited for Aquaman the Becoming because I want to see what they're going to do with Andy, right? And I think, like, that's one of the big things. I know that, like, part of Future State Aquaman is, like, this is how Andy grew up or whatever. But, like, mm-hmm. I'm excited to see what they have for that, right? Yeah. And then my other big question mark is, what are they doing with Wonder Woman? Like, I am super confused. I love the Wonder Woman line, but I am so confused what her actual, like, ascension is going to be like.
I have no idea.
Like, I am so confused because, like, they were like, because he was like, no, I won't be part of the Quintessence because I'll find something else. And then she wakes up on Valhalla and she's like, huh? And now she's sort of theoretically taking out Janice. But then what is her something else? It can't just be, oh, I'm back as Wonder Woman. So I don't know what they're doing there.
And I don't know what they're doing either, but there has to be a plan, right?
There has to be a plan. So I'm curious to see what that plan is.
So I'm excited to see what
But I like there's a mystery, right? I don't need to know everything. I'm trying to think if there's anything else I want to talk about with the comics right now. But I think I'm pretty content. This was a great discussion. I am really positive to see if the comics. I'd love to, in future weeks, go over some more of the more smaller things. But I'm really impressed. Checkmate's bad. Don't read that. Blue and Gold is fun. Mr. Miracle Swords of Freedom's phenomenal. I'm trying to think about the other miniseries. Don't read Crime Syndicate. Crush and Lobo apparently is good. I only read the first issue. It was fine. I wasn't bad.
I haven't read any of it.
It was better than I expected, which for a book called Crush and Lobo was saying something. I'm not in love with the next Batman stuff. Like, I was really excited for John Ridley's work. And it's not that he's doing a bad job. It's just I've not been blown away like I had hoped. It very much feels...
your expectations.
Like, I Am Batman is fine. Like, it's a 7. Like, it's 7 or 6. Like, it's good. I'll keep reading it. I just... Mm-hmm. I am not hyped for this book. It's not done enough work to hype me about it. The next Batman Second Son, which I'm reviewing in a month for Comic Book Herald, is like... fun. It's a little incoherent. It's a little too spaced out. It's not the greatest, like, 12-part story. And Ratcatcher's in there, so, you know. That's a fun random connection.
It's Ratcatcher. Like, Ratcatcher's like in a major motion picture now.
There's apparently
a shit on Ratcatcher.
Yeah, we can't show up Ratcatcher anymore. No, but it's like there's this new section of Gotham called the Underneath or something. I don't remember this thing ever being a thing. Don't you feel like Gotham just continually adds like new secret bits of it that no one knows about? Like, can someone give me a map of Gotham, please?
Like, please? There has been maps of Gotham before, but they never stick to them.
No, because we got presumably the Underneath.
Continuity changes.
We got Alleytown. We got whatever the hell the garden section was in the Joker War. It's like, there's so many just different parts of Gotham that I'm like so
Gotham's a big place. And like all the multiverse shenanigans keep changing it, I guess, maybe.
But I wasn't aware there was an entire underbelly for like homeless kids and the rat catcher called the Underneath that is so crime ridden that no one wants to go down there. Like, when did that happen?
I don't know.
Is Monster Town still a thing from Detective Comics?
If it is, they haven't said.
Like, you know, it's like it's Gotham. Chaos everywhere. The city layout makes no sense.
Yes.
And besides, something scary is coming. Everything's about to change anyway. I'm excited for Fear State, though. I think it's going to be a good event. Joker War was fun. And I think Fear State will be pretty good. Any last thoughts before we wrap it up?
Not really.
Good podcast. I'm surprised we got through as much info as we did, given how much there was to talk about. So, you know.
Yeah.
I'm pretty impressed. It was a dense episode. And it's always a joy talking to you. I hope we can keep doing these, because I enjoy talking to them. There's, like, a lot to talk about. It's been, like, it's, like, I feel like I don't have a lot of comics friends who are, like, super, like, talkative about comics, where, like, I get lots of opportunities to talk to about comics. So I was just kind of dying to talk.
Mm-hmm.
This someone who knows what they're doing. Yeah. So I appreciate you so much. Thank you so much, everyone who's been listening. I hope you enjoyed this podcast. And if you want to reach out and say thank you for a good podcast, you can hit up at Nathan Payson on Nathan.Payson. No, at Payson Nathan on Twitter. PAYSON Nathan. And hear my thoughts on various comics and stuff. It'll be fun. Anyway, thank you all so much for watching. Have a wonderful day. Bye.
Bye.